You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Megan.
Hello.
Megan, for those that haven't come across you online, tell us your name and what's going on hot right now. Why are we talking today?
I am Dr. Megan, the prednisone pharmacist online.
What really caught my eye about you, and we just did a show on niching down last week, is to see that you have attacked prednisone, one product, one website, one very small niche out of the vast pharmacy.
Yeah.
And I know you have a story to go along with why you picked prednisone. But what I'm really interested in, because this is the Business of Pharmacy podcast, we have no room here for empathy or sympathy.
It's all numbers.
You're not going to get me feeling sorry for you. What I want to get into is there's other pharmacists listening that are saying, yeah, I did that. And I was on, you know, Accutane as a kid, or I was on inhalers, or I was on this. And so I'm really curious about your story. Mm-hmm. I narrowed that down to one. And you had to both make a product and then market it. This all started somewhere, though. This is your chance to get us to cry, but we're business people here.
This is the chance to cry. I had been inhaling all of this online and innovation information that was coming through the world 2.5 years ago. I had been following a few pharmacists that I loved, like Blair Telemeyer, and I'd been watching her summit every year, and it had given me so many ideas. And then I'd been listening to this other podcast called Choose FI. It's about financial independence. And they had talked about niching and choosing what you can do to help people and starting a website. And so I had all of these ideas swirling around, and I had no idea what to do.
How long had you been out of pharmacy at the time?
I graduated 11 years ago. So that was nine years out of pharmacy school.
So 2-3 years ago, you start getting more interested in some of the online talking about entrepreneurship?
Yeah.
Just for kicks? Or did you always think you were going to do something online? What flipped the switch?
Being a third generation pharmacist, my grandpa started the family pharmacy 65 years ago. My dad's been doing it. So I come from a long line of entrepreneurs, just trying to find ways to innovate and help people. And I worked in the pharmacy for 10 years, but I live 300 miles away, so that wasn't an option to continue working there. First, we moved to New York City for my husband's graduate degree, and then we moved 300 miles away from where my family's been for the last 65 years.
300 miles away.
The pharmacy's in Salt Lake City.
Where did your husband study at New York?
He's a lawyer, and he was getting a graduate degree in law.
Oh, those lawyers. We don't talk too kindly of them here.
I know. No, really.
Just last show, the problem with lawyers is you, unless you're in a certain kind of law, you either are or have the potential always for conflict.
Yes.
You know, it's always the 50-50 kind of thing. Where in pharmacy or medicine, if everything goes right, you can all be on the same.
Everyone wins, right?
Theory. And I was just saying last week that nobody really has any pharmacy jokes. You know, there's plenty of attorney jokes.
That's right. There are tons of them. And he fits a lot of those molds, but he doesn't fit a lot of the other ones.
All right. So you moved 300 miles away for his work, I'm going to guess, or not?
Yeah. Okay. So he could be.
Not enough going on where you were, or did you want to get away too?
Oh, he's from here. So we got closer to his side of the family.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. You got closer to his side of the family.
Yep.
Okay. So when you graduated, you were never really part then of the family business because you moved, you were always gone from there.
Yeah, and right after graduation, I actually got a job for a managed care company. And so I started an MTM program for that managed care insurance company. And I had tons of fun doing that. Like I was working from home, helping people, innovating. And that was 5 years of Fortune 200 company fun. And then they like stole my job and all sorts of misery when I went on maternity leave. So I've been working as a managed care consultant ever since. And
from home.
So I've been actually working from home as a pharmacist for 11 years.
That was your business?
I was a consultant, but I only had one client, so.
That's enough if they're, that's perfect if they're paying enough.
They were paying enough. It was awesome.
Was it a doctor's office or something? Or?
So it was another insurance company, and I was doing the prior authorizations and appeals, and just from my own computer, anywhere I needed internet access.
Most of it just on screen. You weren't doing any video stuff then or doing stop screen stuff. All right. So you're at home.
Yep.
And you're supposed to be working, but you're watching YouTube videos.
Yep. Watching YouTube videos, listening to podcasts. I'm just trying to understand, like, what are the options? Because I loved the pharmacist on Choose FI, Jonathan. He abandoned his Walgreens job and he doesn't even practice pharmacy anymore. He's just a podcaster. And
oh, that's a pharmacist-based show?
There are two hosts of that podcast, and one of them's a pharmacist, the other's an accountant. And so they kind of come from two different perspectives, like the money guy and the guy who was a six-figure earner. And like how...
Do they market that at all?
I don't think they really mention that he's a pharmacist unless... You're listening and you're like, oh, you abandoned a six-figure job. Like, wow.
That's cool. I'll have to check that out. So you listen to that. Mm-hmm. And then Blair, you came across her stuff.
Yep. And they were both just giving me great ideas for ways to help and make money at the same time. And I was like, but where do I fit in? You know, like I couldn't figure out my role, what made me special, what niche I should choose, how can I really personally help people? Because I've just worked for either my family pharmacy or the Fortune 200 or 500 managed care companies.
Capture why you started looking and listening to Blair and to the other podcasts and so on. Were you getting an itch or was it boring doing the other stuff?
It was.
Did you want money or what were you looking for when you started tripping over these podcasts and so on?
Well, I mean, with the Choose FI, I wanted the financial independence for sure. Like I want to bring my husband home, right? Like I want us to be independent and just able to do what we want to do and live a less stressful life. That was the first motivation.
So financial was a part of it or a big
part. Yeah. And then, so that was kind of the Choose FI side. And then Blair's side, it was, I can help people and get paid at the same time if I find the right way to do it. But it seemed really hard for someone who's only worked from home to do that. And so there was a lot more puzzle pieces I needed to find of how I could do that working from home.
And you're sitting there like I did years ago and saying, what do I have special? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't pharmacist, but what do I have special? And you were looking for that tagline or that niche, I guess.
Yeah, a niche and like something worth doing, you know, something worth like getting up for and continuing to do year after year.
Yeah, you didn't want to be infamous for something in pharmacy. You wanted to have an actual purpose for it. So you just sat around and locked yourself in a room and thought about it?
No, actually, my pharmacist friend, we went to all 4 years of pharmacy school together. She came and visited me and we coincidentally had been kind of going through the same thing. Like, I want to do some sort of a side hustle. And she was like, what about Amazon drop shipping? Or what about working for an MLM? What about all of these other things? I'm like, but then like that defeats the whole purpose of having gotten my degree. Like, there's got to be a way to integrate all of this. And so I had had her over for a visit, and she had actually come while I was in the midst of chemotherapy. I think I'd had my third infusion of Rituxan the 2 days before out of four. And they had said it's going to take 8 hours, it's going to take a whole day, and it's going to suppress your immune system. And the reason I had had to go on the chemo was because I had been on prednisone for the last 6 months before that for ITP. And for anybody who actually remembers that in pharmacy school, I'm impressed. It stands for immune thrombocytopenia. And it's where my immune system was attacking my platelets. And so I had been prescribed prednisone and I had gone through the entire roller coaster of side effects and I was completely miserable. And then they said, well, it's not working even though you're suffering all these side effects. So we're going to have to take out your spleen. And I was like, what? You're going to remove an organ? Like, no, that's not happening. There's got to be a better way. And I did some research and some fellow pharmacists had done some great literature evaluation and found that for a young female, an otherwise good health would do well with Rituxan and that the splenectomy wouldn't be, you know, necessarily as effective or long term. I was like, all right, I'm the ideal candidate. I'm doing that chemo. But I still had to take the prednisone too, or my platelets would be like completely gone and I could bleed to death. So that third infusion, I'm listening to these podcasts. My friend comes over. We're putting ideas and nothing is fitting. And then I'm putting my toddler down for a nap. And I had an epiphany. I was trying to take a nap. Along with my baby, and I couldn't. I couldn't fall asleep because prednisone wouldn't let me. It was just this terrible insomnia driving thing. I couldn't sleep at night, and I couldn't even take a nap when I was trying to recover from chemo, trying to get well. And right then, I thought, I need to help people on prednisone. I have a unique ability to help people on prednisone because I've had to suffer it too. And I was like, really? Like, prednisone of all the drugs? That was like, yeah, the most boring and miserable drug in pharmacy school. I don't want to have anything to do with that. And I thought there is a reason that people are suffering these side effects. And so I dove into the research and I discovered that prednisone actually steals 10 nutrients. Pretty much most pharmacists know that it steals calcium and vitamin D and causes osteoporosis. But I discovered it steals 8 other nutrients. And I was like, whoa, this is fascinating. And I found that tons of the side effects could be prevented, essentially, if the proper nutrients were given back. And so I created a dietary supplement. And I thought I would be going to market that fall with it. Didn't happen. Hold on. Jump straight to the end.
I pretend to be a pharmacist during the day at work. I don't know how to pronounce all those things, but I know that chemo drug, is it fair to say that's a cancer drug?
Yeah, it's for B-cell lymphoma.
Why did they use it in your case?
Because part of, nobody really knows how ITP happens. It's something to do with the immune system, but one of the likely reasons has to do with the B-cells and the mechanism of action of Rituxan. And so
you had too many platelets or not enough?
I had almost zero. You're supposed to have 150 to 400. And the first time they caught it, I was at 12 and they sent me to the emergency room and I was down to 3.
It seems to me that if I'm sitting there and I'm suffering through this like you were, that I would pick the more sexy drug of saying I'm on a cancer drug, because that gets more. And it seems like people always hear of that, there's probably some that cause no issues to speak of. But so did you have a toss-up in your head at all between the prednisone and the chemo drug, or was it a no-brainer because the chemo drug was kind of doing okay for you compared to the prednisone?
Yeah, so Rituxan has this crazy infusion reaction you can get that can be fatal, but it's super rare. Otherwise, it's pretty well tolerated, causes a little bit of fatigue. And so it's like, I don't really have a lot to complain about. Like, I did have this minor infusion reaction. Like, they had to give me Benadryl and stop the infusion, give me some Tylenol and all that stuff. But it was not a big deal. Whereas prednisone, like, is so miserable. Like, pharmacists and doctors who prescribe it really have no idea, unless they've gone through it, how completely life-changing it is. Like, it changes your appearance, it changes your weight, it changes your ability to sleep and your ability to interact with people around you. Like, it changes every aspect of your life, and it's miserable. And so I found this pain that I knew I could help ameliorate.
You've already jumped to the product. Mm-hmm. Was this a combo already out there that you rebranded, or did you actually have to get this made, or what?
Yeah. So I jumped on Natural Medicine's database to really learn more about it. And I've discovered that prednisone legitimately steals all these nutrients. And their database is so awesome. It goes through and shows each and every study showing how it's working and what's stealing what. You can go through any drug and look for nutrient depletion. It's so cool.
Interesting. And some of it comes out in the potty, and some of it gets broken down. It gets
blocks
depleted.
The absorption, tons of different mechanisms. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And so looking through that database, I discovered that tons of drugs do mess up nutrient levels. But which of them are clinically significant, right? Like, which of them actually make any difference on the side effects or on risk for future effects? And there aren't that many that are really legitimate. Like, I can't remember their names, but the guys who wrote the book on this, like, they found hundreds of thousands of depletions from all these thousands of drugs. But the ones that really matter, I consolidated those down, and I have a list that I can share. But one of the most, I personally think the worst drug at depleting is prednisone.
Interesting. People going through it, it's not like, I don't know. It's not like you have someone at the top of his or her game, and they have, a sore throat, and so they're taking medicine and it depletes stuff, but they're still doing their day-to-day successful stuff. When you're on prednisone for that long, there's
something wrong.
You got something wrong. You got a ton of worries. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything that can help it, you'll take it, especially something well-documented like the vitamins. Mm-hmm. Or the vitamins and minerals, can we say, or all right. Mm-hmm.
Nutrients.
So you can't just say we made this. What do you mean you made it?
Yeah. So that I thought was going to be this really quick, like, I send a list of ingredients and turn around and it'll just appear. I'll just have this bottle in front of me and there it is. And I was wrong. It was a process. I had no idea. Another influencer on my thinking was Tim Ferriss and his 4-hour work week. And one of the things he had done was create a dietary supplement, and he made it sound so easy. And marketing it's just pay per click, you're set. And it's not like that. Maybe it was when he did it back 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a different world now.
Right.
And so I had to do a lot more than I ever anticipated. I really thought that it would be this quick process and I would have a product and I'd be selling it and ta-da. But it, from the day I had my epiphany, it was exactly 1 year for product development until I had bottle in hand. It was, and I've been a project manager, like at that Fortune 200 company. That was my job. I was the program manager. Like, I created that program from scratch. Like, I've done this. I knew what I was doing, right? And it took a year.
Megan, I don't know a damn thing about this, but I want to guess at something, okay? And tell me how far I'm off. You decided what you wanted to go into this, and you go online, and there's a company that you say, I want to get this drug with these ingredients, this many milligrams of each ingredient, and here's my list of nine things, and I'm gonna click how many I want, I'm gonna design the label on there, and you're gonna give me back whatever I, 100 or whatever, or even like the Amazon print as you go kind of thing. And you're gonna give me back this bottle that's got these nine ingredients in here. Is that even close?
Yeah, that's a pretty good summary of the process. And I thought that that process could go really fast.
Seems that way. It seems like you're just going up to McDonald's and saying, give
just
me.
Just order it and it'll show up. No.
Where am I off there, Megan? Because that was a guess. Where am I off as far as, are there companies like that? And
yeah, so there are custom manufacturers for dietary supplements. There are white label people. So if you have something you're like, I just want some calcium and vitamin D, they can smack your label on it and say, pharmacist recommended or whatever, Jones Pharmacy, whatever you want to call it, your own label. You can do that. That's super easy, the white labeling.
Yeah.
But the custom contract manufacturing, I thought would be just, here's a list of ingredients, here's what I want, and make it. But I didn't like dietary supplements. I didn't believe in them. I had come from a very skeptical doctor pharmacy program where we had a really good herbal program. Like the professor was amazing, but all the other professors were like, dietary supplements are just trash. Like you might as well just throw the money down the toilet. And so I wanted something that was good. Like I didn't want just to trust any company that they were going to actually put what I wanted in there and that the ingredients that they did use were of any quality. So I had to vet a lot of manufacturers, and that took a long time to get interviews with them, to find just people who had all the capabilities I needed. Like I wanted them to be FDA registered and all of these different criteria. And it was hard to find that information until I made an appointment with them and waited 2 weeks for them to be available. And just all of that took months.
Were these phone appointments or in person?
I did some visits to the manufacturers, but mostly it was over the phone to begin with. And then, and I had narrowed it down to my top two. I wanted to visit them. And
were they from China?
No. So that was one of the things is I wanted an American company. Yeah. And so I did not like fly to China or anything. No, I wanted a legitimate company and somebody with good clients who they can be like, I've got this and this and this. Well, they wouldn't really tell me, but we've got the top people. And if you were to go to a trade show, everybody would say, come to us. I wanted somebody who had a reputation to defend. Somebody who had been in business a while, because you might be surprised that there are a lot of shady operations and fly by night, and they change their name every couple years. And I didn't want that.
Well, just by all the things sitting at the improperly labeled things sitting at the gas station checkout.
Exactly. And so just the due diligence alone took months just to find the right manufacturer. And then the process going back and forth with them and my formula, I thought I would be like, okay, here's my formula, and they just go for it. But they had to like make their own version of it and then test that and then wait for the results to go to a third party lab. And so to get the legitimacy, I had to take time. And so I waited and waited. And then I'm just a little company, right? Like, it's just me.
Yeah.
And I wanted a legitimate company to do this, but they have big, huge clients who right. have big, huge orders and use up their entire workforce to yeah. fulfill. And so I had to wait in line to when they were available to make my stuff. And that was yeah. another wait. But before that was getting the materials. So then they had to order each and every ingredient and then test every single ingredient and make sure they were all, you know, sanitary and actually legitimately what they really were. And that process was months. And so my contact from the time I contacted them until the time I got my bottle was, I don't know, July to April. Like, that's how long it took.
That probably seems like a long time to you, but that doesn't seem that long to me. That's a lot of stuff
going on there. It is a lot. There. And it was busy.
I know that, Megan, during this time, somewhere, you, or before this time, you had to decide, you know, a few things. One is, you know, did you have any proof of concept this was going to go? And then you had to do all your legal stuff, which I'm sure that jokester of a husband. No.
Exactly. It was convenient. Convenient to be married to a lawyer.
The attorney, and you had the trademark of the name, mm-hmm. and you had the design, and you had how you're going to distribute and all that stuff. How did that all happen before you decided on the product, or did you kind of do that by hoping this was going to work and then did that later? Where does all that yeah. stuff fit into with the
manufacturer? Ordering? Yeah, that's the hard part, is to get a trademark, to get a patent, to all of those things, you can't tell anyone about it. Right. And so I couldn't.
And what's
Nutrinize is the name of my Nutrinize. Company. And then my product for people on prednisone is called Zone.
Zone. Nutrinize. I'm looking mm-hmm. at it. Nutrinize and then Zone. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And then you had to trademark that and then mm-hmm. do all that. So I'm sorry, I cut you off then. So how did you know that? I mean, did you have a business plan, I guess, even? You know, and I know a lot of us pharmacists don't do that because we're not turning it into yeah. a lot of bank and all this. And, or the banks know, like, kind of who you are and stuff like that. But did you have to show at least your husband?
Right. That's a really good question. So luckily, when I was in pharmacy school, I was in the NCPA, the National Community Pharmacists Association, and I participated in the business plan competition. So I'd done that a few times, and I thought I knew what I was doing, you know, when it came to starting a business. And so I understood the business, like the financial and how to create a business plan kind of thing from that experience. And so now I was trying to take all of that and pivot it to dietary supplements, which is similar but very different because it's a physical yeah. product instead of a storefront. It's a
right.
brand instead of a location, you know.
How did you know when this time's up, when the product's ready, how did you know how many to get?
So I wanted to do a really soft launch. I wanted to launch with a small quantity so that I could test it. You know, I didn't want to invest a ton of money, but right. in order to get the chemicals here, all those ingredients, in order to manufacture it, there's a minimum order quantity. And like, you have to buy a kilogram of, you know, calcium, a kilogram of that. And
gotcha.
Once all that adds up, I had to order 4,000 bottle sets.
4,000 bottles.
Mm-hmm. And so
I know you have two different products. Those come in different bottles, right?
Yeah, there's the morning and the bedtime.
Morning and bedtime. So do you have 2,000 of each?
4,000 of each. And they come together as a set.
Oh, they come in a – gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. So – I don't know. I'd be I'd be excited, but also really, really nervous to have those arrive at my house as a, you know, from UPS or whatever.
I didn't have them sent to my house, though, thankfully. I only had one box sent to my house. They have amazing technology to do shipping. And so I had it sent to a fulfillment warehouse in Texas.
Separate from that company? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wanted a turnkey solution that would do it all for me, but there isn't really one. Like, they kind of have friends that they're like, hey, you should try them, but there's not really a... Here, you want to start a supplement and we'll ship it for you.
So you were doing similar to what your friends had suggested of doing a drop ship thing through Amazon and Alibaba and those kind of things. But you decided not to go with Amazon for this fulfillment. You use this other place.
Exactly.
Why don't you use Amazon?
I am still trying to decide whether to go into Amazon with my product, but they are notorious for stealing ideas and
pricing, probably
pricing to the bottom and things like that. Right. And so if you have a great product, you'll have it for a few years and then they might just take your idea and make their own version of it.
Try to be a little bit below the radar when you can't.
Yeah. First. And so it's a tough thing. Like, how far below the radar do you want to be? You want to be unfindable? Yeah.
You get one box and you do your opening and you smell it and you sleep with it at night. You cuddle it and your husband misses you because you're cuddling your box of, you know, your Zone bottles and things like that. But the rest of it is all at the fulfillment center. What next?
So then I thought, if you build it, they will come. Right? Isn't that what the movie Field of Dreams tells us?
Like, yeah. You got them there. Everybody's going to line up to buy them.
And I discovered during this whole process of waiting for my product to come that I pretty much needed to become a personal brand of me, myself, having taken prednisone. I needed to be able to tell my story.
You weren't going to do that at first.
I just wanted to let it stand for itself. And I had actually even wanted to do a different name. This was my plan B. I'd wanted a really cool name called RX Side FX. I thought it was so fancy. Like RX and then capital SIDE and then capital FX. So
that's really
cool. This is so awesome. And then I discovered you can't use the RX symbol on a supplement. It kind of confuses people into thinking it's a prescription. That's just not legal. So I had to pivot, and that was another expensive and time consuming change. And that's when I was like,
trademark office takes forever to hear back from them and stuff.
Exactly. And I finally got my trademark for Nutrinize. So I've got that, but it was a very time-consuming process to rebrand again before even anybody knew about it.
When you thought, Megan, that you were going to be not the face of the company, what was your anticipation of percent purchases? Was it going to be all online purchases, or were you hoping for anything else?
My vision is that every single prescription for prednisone is offered a bottle of Nutrinize Zone.
Gotcha.
So hopefully someday this is carried by Cardinal and McKesson, that you can order it just like you would order Florigen, the supplement that pharmacists give along with antibiotics. That there's a precedent for it, that there's another company out there who makes a high quality product to help combat the side effects of a prescription drug. That's my vision, but Cardinal's not going to take it if people aren't loving it already. And so theoretically the easiest way to do it is to sell it online.
That's the damn thing about that, Shark Tank show. It's like, if I went on there, I'd be so excited. You remember macrame? You're too young for that. You remember macrame with that brown strings and you'd make owls and stuff out of them? You don't remember that. All right, when I was a kid, and the listeners who are old farts like me, they'll remember you made these macrame, like after school programs. You'd have a ring and you'd do this like braiding of this like twine, and then you'd have pot holders and things like that. But I'd go on Shark Tank and I'd say, I sold a macrame holder. But these guys on Shark Tank, they're like, how many sales do you have? And they're like, we've had like 5 million of these. So, well, not enough for us. It's like, well, what do I need? I mean, you got to walk on there and say you're Procter & Gamble before they even like want to do something with you, it seems.
Exactly.
But Cardinal doesn't want you until everybody else wants you already. Right.
They're not going to take a risk, you know, marketing you and enabling that process unless there's a proof of concept. And so I needed to get the proof of concept first.
When did you know that you had to that you needed to step into the face of the brand? How long was it before you knew that?
So I'd had this thought in April, and I probably had to decide that in like, I don't know, December. So it was a long time when I was thinking that I could just hide behind the brand of the product and not have to be a personal brand.
Was it after you already had them available? Was it months after that they were already available when you made the change? Mm-hmm. Or did you make that change before they even came out?
Yeah, I made the change before they came out. And I launched myself, my personal brand, in February. And then I launched the physical product in April. So like I had a few months of lead up.
Of what year?
A year ago.
Year ago, mm-hmm. 1990 or
2019, geez. The year of the COVID.
The other day, I went around the pharmacy and I'll probably have to cut this out, but I went around the pharmacy and I wrote down like May 20th, 2020. And I spent about 5 minutes marching around the pharmacy, said how cool this was that the date was 2020, 2020. It wasn't, it was 5/20/20. And I went around the pharmacy and said how cool this is. You'll never have another date like this for another, you know, century in a month or whatever. And it's like, it wasn't until like 3 hours later, I'm like, it's not 2020, 2020. It's 5/20/20. There's no such thing as 2020, 2020.
That's right.
And everybody just let me carry on like an old There goes Mike again. I'm like, why didn't anybody tell me that? They're like, well, I don't know, just let you have your fun. Mm-hmm. All right. How did you know, Megan, that you needed to be the face? When did you decide that? Because the product hadn't even come out yet. So when did you know that you had to do that? Were you doing some testing and something wasn't going how you wanted it or what?
So I had started this thinking I understood what the process would be, like how to get the physical product and then how to sell it. And then I learned there's a lot more to learn about online marketing. Mm-hmm. And discovered that it's really in stories that you connect to people, and that it's really hard to connect as just some letters on a logo, that you really need a face and a story and emotion and connection to make it happen. And so that's what I'd learned over those months. I'd been listening to more podcasts and more online trainings and...
So it wasn't learning from experience. It was truly learning. Mm-hmm. People were saying, to do your best product, here's probably what you want to
do. Exactly. And so I had to become Dr. Megan, the prednisone pharmacist. I didn't want to call myself doctor. I didn't want to like have anybody see my face. I didn't want anything. Like I wanted to just be my private self. And
you don't like any of that.
I love attention, but I love giving continuing education presentations. Like I love that. Like that's so much fun to me, giving public speaking.
Easy for you.
Clearly I'm really good at it.
What's the difference though between getting up in front of a crowd and having your name somewhere else? Why is that different if you like attention, which I certainly do? What's the difference?
I think the difference is when you're giving a continuing education presentation, everyone in the audience is a pharmacist or a technician. And it's like a narrow group and you can share as much or as little as you want. about you personally, you know, just I graduated from this College of Pharmacy this year and I've worked here. Whereas online, you kind of have a lot more that comes into what you like are obligated to share. I mean, just if nothing else, your signature on your emails to comply with the law has to have a physical address. Like you have to have a physical address to share with the world. And I didn't really want to do that.
You're realizing like, hey, this is getting more tangible. Mm-hmm. Plus you had to share stuff. You couldn't just go on there and you couldn't just have a website and say, here's my degree, because nobody would care. Yeah. I mean, they'll get diluted. Everybody has a degree online for something, you know, but you knew you were going to have to share a lot more. And you didn't like that.
Well, I like teaching. I love, like, I've been offered teaching positions at a medical school and a pharmacy school. Like, I love teaching. And so I wanted to integrate that somehow into this, but I didn't know that it was going to be necessary to actually make my product viable, because I figured everybody else understood what I understood, the curse of knowledge, that if you're taking a prescription drug and it's causing side effects, there might be a nutrient depletion involved. That's actually kind of a huge leap that requires education. And in order for anybody to care about me sharing that information, I have to tell my story. And so it's a...
Right. You're kind of creating a... you saw that with a lot of... companies over the years, like Viagra, had to almost not invent the ED market, but at least invent people being open enough to talk about it. But you see it with a lot of other things where, you know, like toenail problems or something, where, or the new one, like every few months online, we models on, oh, did I say we models on Instagram? I always mess that up. No, the models on Instagram, they're always complaining. They were doing like underarm creases and you couldn't have the underarm crease. And so I think ladies were probably even going for Botox for that or something. But they're actually inventing
a problem.
They're actually inventing a new problem where you're not inventing your problem, but you do have to teach about it.
Often like in those situations, you're making somebody problem aware. Somebody taking prednisone doesn't need to be told that they have a problem. Like, they know how miserable they are. They are suffering so much, but they don't have, there's no idea in anyone's mind that there is a solution. And so I've had to make them solution aware. And it's a totally different game.
And it's embarrassing for a lot of times with the moon face.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It's mortifying, like, to have a normal face when you were healthy and then have to go on prednisone and suddenly you look obese. You feel terrible. And it's like, I didn't just go on a binge.
They said that Jerry Lewis telethon. Remember that, Jerry Lewis? He's an old guy.
I don't really.
I'm going to start talking to older people. You young people are no fun. Now, Jerry Lewis was this old comedian with Dean Martin, and he had the Jerry Lewis telethon. It was on every Memorial Day. But one year he came, he just had his face was as round as a basketball. Mm-hmm.
It's really common. And, you know, people Google prednisone side effects. People Google prednisone. Like, there's this huge, huge lack of information online about prednisone, because there's no big drug company who's got this huge marketing budget and this huge education budget that's filling that gap. And there's no, what's weird about prednisone is it's not like it treats one condition where, like, you know, levothyroxine, it's one of the top drugs in the world. It treats one condition, like you need a thyroid replacement. And so you can just target people with a thyroid problem, like Isabella Wentz, the thyroid pharmacist, does. Whereas prednisone can be prescribed by any specialist or general doctor, and it can be prescribed for almost any condition. And so there's no like simple way of finding the people on prednisone because it can be any person, but they're all suffering. 70% of people on prednisone gain weight and feel terrible about it. And nobody warns them. I'm in the support group for people on prednisone. And of those 70% who do gain weight, almost none of them had been warned by their pharmacist or their doctor that they were going to gain weight, that there was anything that they could do about it, that there was any reason to tell them. And I can see why, like, if you're going to be on prednisone, there's probably a really acute situation. Like, maybe you're in the hospital. Maybe you're unconscious. Right. Maybe, like, you're intubated. Yeah, right. Like, there's a lot of good reasons why nobody's talking to you about gaining weight. Like, we're just trying to save your life here.
Right. Exactly.
But happens.
As it goes on, then, it happens.
And they are, like, it's just another insult to the injury. Just not only do I feel terrible, but now I look awful.
You talk about, you know, searches online and stuff. Is Google part of your ad process at all? Or
I did Google Ads pretty in depth for a little while, but it was another humongous hurdle because you can't market anything with the prescription drug's name in it unless you are a manufacturer of a drug.
I know we had to as a pharmacy, we could not mention prescription or drug or anything unless we had bought, I think it's through the NCPA now or something, unless, or maybe through the NCPDP or something, but unless we bought a .pharmacy domain name, which we don't use, but we own k.pharmacy, and that's how you prove that you were a true pharmacy. But that was like $1,000 or something. Yeah. Was that the same thing?
It was so unique because if I was representing a pharmacy, then I could have gone through that same process of approval within the Google Ad Network that you're talking about, like getting registered with the proper authority who's their policeman for Google. And that would have been fine. But I'm not a pharmacy. I don't sell prescription drugs. And I'm also not a lot of other entities. I'm this unique dietary supplement talking about a prescription drug that Google had no idea what to do. And so it was months, but going back and forth with their call center in India. Like, how often do you get phone calls from India? Not very often unless you're trying to get through the Google Ad Network. So I had to go through that whole approval process just to even start the ads. And then
And there were some language barriers.
There were language barriers because it's like prednisone. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the whole process, just getting approved to give them money to advertise my product.
And then how do you feel Google went for you?
I gave up on it for now. I might bring it back, but it didn't really, like I mentioned, people are problem aware, but not solution aware, and making that gap, bridging that gap within one advertisement was too much.
Google is going to let people find you with a Google ad, but it seems like that's a few steps later. They wouldn't even know what they're looking for, basically.
Right. They would have no idea.
And then you might say, I have a solution. They're like, I can't even define the problem, really. I just feel like crap. And they're not even looking, I guess. And probably your keywords, those probably were not cheap.
Well, not many. There's not a lot of competition in the prednisone world. Nobody really cares. But
it always surprises me how expensive some of those words are. Who the hell is looking for prednisone? It seems like somebody got something, you know, some other company, some study or something. And so they jumped the word price.
Yeah. So it's not like it was back when Tim Ferriss was advertising, when it was just pennies per click. It wasn't cheap by any means, but compared to other search terms, it was relatively affordable. So
nowadays, almost with Google, like searching through all of the social media. I'm not sure exactly what they searched for, but I do know that podcasts have got on there and they're searching for podcast words and so on. You don't necessarily have to pay for Google AdWords because if you're specific enough, it's going to come up.
The search engine optimization. Yeah, I've been trying to do that, the free side of it, right? Like having Google just find me. And that took a year. But I finally am the number one hit for prednisone nutrient depletion. It's only taken a year, but we've got it. Number one for free. So
that's great.
I mean, and that what's cool about that is that reaches somebody when they're past the problem, like they know they're suffering, and then they have figured there's a cause for their suffering, right? They figured out prednisone nutrient depletion might be it. And so I'm catching somebody at that point who's a lot more of a hot buyer. Like if you've heard of funnels, then we're pretty far down the funnel. They're not a cold audience anymore. They're at least warm, if not hot, by the time they get to that term. So
the challenge, it seems, is to get people to that term.
Yes.
To know that they're feeling bad with prednisone, not because it's something they ate along with it, or it's not because they were out in the sunshine too much or took it too hot of a shower or something. They're feeling crappy because of a nutrient depletion. Mm-hmm. They've got to get to that point, it seems, before they look for
that. Before even thinking there could be a solution. Exactly.
You consider that your job then now?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like what I've been doing for the last year as the prednisone pharmacist is finding the pain and addressing it as helpfully as I possibly can and understanding them better than they understand themselves. Like putting a face to this suffering so that they can really enter into this little universe that I've created and learn how to combat side effects. That it's not just my product. My product does help and people love it. But it's also tons of little things that they can do that they don't even know because nobody told them. And they're free and simple, but nobody told them. And so I'm trying to be the one who tells them this is how to combat side effects.
What would you consider your challenges right now? Is it for the company? Would it be, look at all the things that a company does, from marketing to shipping to financial to product availability to customer interaction, all that kind of stuff. What do you think about the most? In my mind, I come from a marketing background, so I'm always thinking marketing. But what other struggles are you thinking about and so on?
Yeah, so marketing is definitely huge. Just trying to find the right balance of investing in the product to get at my actual return on ad spend and effort, right? Like that's a real struggle right now. And so I've been, to go a little further with Google ads, I've paused those so that I can put all of my investment into Facebook ads. So mm-hmm. I have a Facebook page. I've spent a lot of time and energy making my Facebook presence so that I can enable those Facebook ads to succeed. And so that is trying to find the right ad, trying to find the right message to go with that ad, trying to connect with people and make that jump from problem aware to solution aware to buying. And so that's what I'm spending my energy on right now.
Are you able to, in Facebook, and I know they've changed some of this stuff, but it used to be that you could market people that are fans of this page, or you could market people that have been to a certain website. It seems like there used to be even more, and now it seems the more I go back to look, even though the even though Facebook has more minutia of divisions, it seems like the divisions I'm looking for aren't always there. It's really the old standbys of hobbies and interests and age and renter or homeowner or degrees and things like that. Are you able to find a decent connection with your product? And what are those if you found them?
Yeah, so that has been one of the biggest struggles, because it's incredibly creepy how much Facebook knows about us. Like, they track 52,000 points of data on every single user, and they pixel you. I had no idea what pixeling was, but if you go to a website that has a Facebook pixel installed, they track you, and then they know that you visited that website, and then they can serve you ads to that product or whatever it is. And so there's a huge level of creepiness involved. And so I do have a pixel on my website so that I can retarget these people on Facebook. But I think what you're also asking is, what other points of data am I targeting?
Yeah, they probably don't have people on there that say they're a fan of prednisone. Right? Yeah, what other groups are there that, besides just tracking if they've been to your site?
There are about 100,000 people in Facebook's support groups for prednisone. It's really kind of insane that people are that problem aware. They need a support group. And so asthma, allergies, and prednisone, or prednisone support, or other disease specific, but like all anybody talks about is prednisone. And so there are groups, but you can't target groups, like members of groups with ads. That's like, that crosses the level of creepiness, right?
You see them, but that's not one of the ad availability sections kind of thing.
And so there are strategies to getting people within those groups paying attention and things like that. But then there are pages where you can get information of guests. Like, oh, Dr. Josh Axe has 3 million people who like his page. If they like his page, they're kind of my target person, because they understand the need for proper nutrients. That his big deal is food is medicine. And so that person who already has that belief, that mindset, and if they're also taking prednisone, they're my person, right? Like, that's my ideal. Right. Customer avatar. And so I've been able to target people like Josh Axe and other disease, wellness, health sort of pages. I can say, if a person likes that, serve the ad to them.
Yeah. And I think you can do maybe like employers and things like that, but you're not going to get that defined, I guess. How much time, Megan, are you doing with your, or the stuff that we talked about that you've been doing on your own, how much are you doing of that still?
So with the coronavirus, if anybody wants a prior authorization, they kind of have to go to a doctor's office. And if they want an appeal for that prior authorization, they really have to be visiting the doctor's office. And since doctors haven't been taking...
They'll say, like, when's the last time you saw this person, that kind of part.
Or just to identify the problem, you know, like, oh, you have psoriasis. Here, let me give you a $15,000 a month injectable. Here you go. That's not going to happen if they're... Like, dermatologists were basically shut down, right? Like, there's no acute situation you need to go to a dermatologist. And so, basically, it was this perfect storm of no more prior authorizations leads to no more appeals of the prior authorization leads to they don't need me anymore. They can do it with their in-house staff. So I got laid off a month ago.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And not, I mean, like a consultant, so it's not really laid off, but like it's been my job for 5 years. So
let's go pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, let's go 4 months ago. How many hours are you putting in still doing that?
I was doing about 15 hours a week.
I know when people ask me, like, how much time do you spend for the pharmacy. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I'm physically doing this or doing that, but I don't think it's been off my mind for, you know, 30 some years or whatever. How much time would you say that you are then putting into the product thought or the, or your stuff?
Yeah. Now? So I was basically doing that for 4 days a week and then this for 1 day a week and then another half an hour every day. And that's what I was doing. And now I have all my time to be able to spend on my little passion project here. And so it's probably 15 hours a week again that I'm spending on this.
How would you grade things maybe compared to where you thought they would be or whatever?
I thought I would have sold out of everything by now. I thought I would have been having to struggle with reordering at this point. And I feel like I finally am at the point where the ball is rolling. Like, I'm not just pushing the rock uphill. Like, I feel like it's finally rolling. But I just thought that was, this whole process has taught me that anything in life is going to take three times longer than you think it will. And like, whether it's a construction project or an IT software project, you just take whatever estimate somebody gives you and multiply that by three, and that'll be more realistic. And so I thought I could get my product really fast. It took at least three times longer than I thought. I thought I could,
right,
you know, be like really having a huge uptake of my product. And I think I'm finally, like, the ball is finally rolling, but it took a year to get to this point with my product on the market. And so it's kind of nice that I am not being distracted by other efforts now, that all of my effort is going into this, because I think that's really what's kind of pushing it over the hill, is that I have the time to invest.
So how long has it been out for?
It came out a year ago, April.
What do you think you'll need to do different this year? And you've already mentioned, I think, more time that you'll have. Do you have any other thoughts up your sleeve of different directions, or will you just continue with more of your presence and online teaching and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I'm trying to really get the whole process of being an online marketer into a routine to make it as manageable as possible. That's one part of it. And then just trying, you know, do I go into Amazon or do I, I've got some people helping me to go into the Cardinal McKesson area. And so it's that next phase, that now that we've got people who have testimonials that are like, whoa, this is amazing. This has changed my life. I can't believe going from night to day how much this has changed me. Now that I've got that proof of concept, it's like I can take it now to say, you should have this so that any pharmacy can order it, so that whenever somebody needs a prescription for prednisone, the pharmacist can say, here it is. And not only is the pharmacy going to go from a $4 prednisone prescription and making money off of selling the supplement to go along with it, but they can feel good knowing that it actually works and it's a clean product that's made with the best ingredients, that it's not just some gimmick. Like, it's legitimate as it possibly can be.
Have you had any guinea pigs of that? Any stores where you just said, look, here's, you know, I'm a consignment or whatever, here's a dozen or whatever, these, try to see how the patients do. Have you tried that yet?
Yeah. So conveniently, I have my dad owns this third generation pharmacy.
I was kind of hinting at that, but I didn't want you to say, no, my dad told me no.
Yeah, he does. Last week, my sister works there. She was telling me that one of the pharmacists was counseling a person on prednisone and saying, hey, you know, here's this. And she's like, hey, you're on prednisone. Look, there's this great product. And she brought it over and my dad sold it to her, and $80 right there. Like, the pharmacy took a $4 prescription and sold it a $80 supplement along with it. That was just last week.
That price point of $80, there's books and books written about pricing a product like that. One of the concerns would be pricing it too low.
Yeah.
You know, just for a kicks. Let's say that you price it at 99 cents. No one's going to buy it for 99 cents. They're going to say it's junk. It should be at the dollar store. There's nothing in it. It's from some other country.
Yeah, there's probably no active ingredient anyway.
And so that's a concern. Take away all the desire of profit and all that kind of stuff. Was 80 like a nice area to put that in? Was that like a psychological price where you thought that's where people are going to think it's important enough and that kind of stuff? Or how did you come up with that price?
There are the four P's of marketing, right? And price is one of those P's. And so it's really one of those things you test and you try to figure out, and it's a hard thing to really determine. And so, yes, the psychological aspect is definitely involved. I looked on other supplement company websites to see what were their price points. If you were to get something that is supposed to be complete, if it's a dual pack, it's one bottle of bedtime, one bottle of morning, 120 total capsules, you know, what per capsule are they charging? What, all of those things, just so that I could have, you know, comparable numbers from other legitimate supplement companies. And so there's this really cool one in Northern Utah where they created one for people recovering from surgery or from fracturing a bone or whatever, because there's a specific nutrient requirement for those situations. And they have this really complex regimen of, you know, take these four plus this two, and, you know, then you taper down, and they're charging like $160. And I was like, okay, I'm not doing six pills a day, but mine is very specialized. I'm doing four pills a day, and it's another legitimate company. And so it was just finding things like that to where it fits in the market. And then there's learning all this marketing stuff. It's been fascinating to find, like, I think it was Tim Ferriss. One of them was, if you charge a high enough price, you get rid of your worst customers.
Yeah.
The 80-20 rule, right? Like, you get people who want quality and they are quality too. Whereas the most whiny, complainy, customer service draining people are those who are looking for the deal. And
let's say there's a benefit of being higher. Let's not pick on going lower. Let's say there's a benefit of being higher. The customer may not be that price conscious, but if you have a pharmacist, let's say, or a doctor that's recommending, you know, this product with antibiotics and this product with cholesterol medicine or something like that, you want to be in the game in their head with, you wouldn't want all these great products to be $100 and yours be two, you know, and I want it triple what people are. That's kind of the game you might be playing in, is the people that are ultimately going to be recommending it to, because they have to be comfortable with it, I imagine.
Right. And then they need a profit margin too. And so it's got to be worth it to them.
Going back 3 years, Megan, have you made the right choice?
I think so.
Good for you.
I mean, the ball is slowly rolling. And so is it, do I have a return on my investment yet? No. But is there a good chance I will? I think so.
It's not like you're saying, no, I should not have done this. I should have gone into, you know, vacuum sales.
Right. I should have joined an MLM and been somebody else's marketer. No, I think if nothing else, like, I have learned some amazing skills. Like, I've given myself a little online marketing education, and that I can use the rest of my life, which is really exciting. No matter what, from here, I have skills that I can create an online course and market it. It doesn't need to be a physical product. I can use these skills in many ways. So I've learned a lot, if nothing else.
What negative emotions have you felt from doing this that might be new or that you've had more of that you wish you didn't have as far as, and maybe there's none, but as far as anxiousness or depression, boredom, you know, guilt. Has this brought any emotions on that maybe people wouldn't think it would bring on?
Yeah, I mean, I think as pharmacists, we're not the most risk-taking profession that there is. Most pharmacists are content to sit behind the counter and just do their job. And advocating for ourselves and investing and taking a risk is just not the type of people that attracts pharmacy. And so I want to be financially independent. And so I save money. I'm trying not to spend money. And so it's been like hard to say, okay, yes, I can have an ad budget. I can actually spend money on this product. And so it's been this real struggle, like where do I invest and how do I justify that investment? Because I'm my own boss and that's awesome. But it's also like kind of scary that it's the whole entrepreneur thing. Where do you invest your time, your money, your blood, sweat, and tears? Do I invest it in Facebook? Do I invest it in Google, YouTube, Instagram? You know, it's that whole, what's the best use of my time and talent?
Yeah.
And so that has just been, it's always been, I think, a struggle to find the focus of where do I invest?
Yeah.
Because I could go any direction. I could go 100% Instagram. I could go 100% Facebook. Or I can dilute myself into a little bit of all of them. And it's hard to find where exactly I should focus.
There's this author I like, David Allen. He talks about, he wrote a book, Getting Things Done. And
I love David Allen.
Do you love David Allen?
Uh-huh. The GTD method.
Yeah. He's great. I just love listening to him. He's so calming and stuff. He's got a great TED Talk. And I mentioned it before on the show, but he was on his sailboat with his soon-to-be wife, I guess, or maybe wife, and the winds had come up or something, and the boat was rocking at 2 in the morning, and he comes up, and he's trying to save the boat, save his life and all that, and he looked up at the moon, and he said it was the most peaceful time he really ever remembers. And I think the gist of it was that he knew that at that point in time, that's exactly where he was supposed to be. Even though it was really tough, he knew that was exactly where it was supposed to be. And I think you see that in other places, but I know that women certainly can have postpartum depression, but in the midst of screaming babies and diapers, they often find their purpose there. Or for the woman or the man who has to put in an 80-hour week because his staff just left him or something, there's a beauty there of that because you know your purpose.
Yes, exactly. And I felt that feeling of this is my purpose, that I've been called to help these millions of people suffering prednisone side effects who have no one to help them, that have this huge gap of information and real worthwhile help. And so it's been very fulfilling to have people be like, you are a godsend, you are an angel, you're exactly who I needed at this time. And that's not selling my product, but it does give me that like purpose fulfillment. And so I have had that experience of I'm in the right place at the right time.
And that overwhelming feeling of knowing you're going in the right direction, if you maybe take a step off the path and put a little bit too much into this advertising or do this or that, those are just minor steps in the direction of really fulfilling things that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Megan, how can a pharmacist listening to this right now best help you?
So I think helping me is helping your prednisone patients. And there are things that they wished they'd been told. And I've kind of mentioned one of them, but there are three things that I want every pharmacist who dispenses prednisone to tell their patients. And the first one is it can cause weight gain. And that is just like an epiphany for so many people on prednisone. They didn't know. And the reason it causes the weight gain is because it's messing with the blood sugars. And so you can give them two valuable tips within that first section is cut out the sugars, cut out the refined sugars, any way of minimizing the ability for the blood sugar to go sky high, because that's where the weight gain's coming from.
Because of the sugar going high, or does it also mess with the appetite?
So the combination of the high blood sugar is messing with the insulin regulation, which is causing the appetite to be dysregulated. So it's this whole cascade of, if you have high sugars, it'll lead to high appetite, which leads to high weight gain.
Cortisol stress.
Exactly. That's what prednisone is. It's the stress hormone. And then the salt. So added salt is going to make that prednisone, for all of you who remember, the pharmacology is the mineralocorticoid aspect of the prednisone. It's causing them to retain salt. So the more salt that they consume, the more water they're going to have to retain, which is weight. And so they're going to have the fat and the salt causing weight gain. Gotcha. And so you want to help them know to cut out basically refined food. They cut out refined food. That is like huge in combating the two miserable side effects of moon face and the pregnant looking belly.
Because then all of the more non-refined foods are going to have the complex carbs, their food fiber. You got all that stuff working towards a more natural system than these spikes and the water holders and things like that.
Right. So that's the first one, is the weight gain. Cut out the refined foods from the high sugars and the high salt. So the second one is that prednisone causes insomnia. And people just think they're going crazy. Like, they don't know that the drug is making their moods weird and that sleep could have something to do with it, and that prednisone's making them not sleep. And so giving them good sleep hygiene tips to go along with that is so valuable. And that's why I've got the melatonin in my bedtime zone.
You had two zones, and that's one of the reasons there too. You've got some different. A lot of times vitamins may not matter as much, but the melatonin, you don't want to be taking that at 8 in the morning.
Exactly. And then the third thing is that prednisone causes osteoporosis. And we think we all know this, but are we even telling our patients what they can do? Are we telling them, you can take calcium and vitamin D, like the American College of Rheumatologists guideline for glucocorticoid-induced osteoporosis recommends? They did a study and only 22% of patients prescribed a steroid were told by their pharmacy to take a calcium and vitamin D, even though it's so simple. And I mean, I'm sure you have calcium and vitamin D in your pharmacy that you can recommend. And one of the amazing things that I wanted to share is about funnels and about upsells and downsells, and how there's online funnels that, you know, you can go through this funnel where they're like, are you sure you don't want that? Okay, I don't. But here's another option. And that's 10 times the price of whatever the last thing was. And it's related. And then you're like, no, I don't want that. And they're like, okay, how about this? And it's half the price of the original thing. And those are upsells and downsells. The same thing can happen in the pharmacy, where you can say, you're on prednisone, you're struggling here, you're going to need this. And you can point at the higher thing, my product, Nutrinize Zone. It's somewhere around $80 that you're going to be charging for it. And they can take that, or you can be like, or you can try this calcium, or you can try this bone health supplement, or you can try this, and upsell and downsell them on that, saying, you need to be taking something. You got to have some sort of calcium and vitamin D. And here's some options. And your options can be as great as this one, or it can be as simple as this one. But no matter what, as your pharmacist, I need you to be taking calcium and vitamin D, because we do not want you coming back here for a prescription bone resorption helper like Boniva or Fosamax. Like, we want to keep you away from that. We want to keep your bones as strong as possible while you're taking prednisone. And so get them on the calcium, however you get them on it, using an upsell and a downsell strategy. And that way you're not only taking your $4 prednisone prescription, but you are helping them in those three ways and you're making a profit.
That's fascinating stuff, that upsell and downsell. A couple months ago, I heard that, like, when they're pricing three items too, like the middle item is really the one they wanted to sell, and they put that just a little bit from the top one, but they make the lowest one ridiculously expensive, ounce for ounce, and blah, blah, blah. And it kind of sucks that pharmacists haven't done much of that just because they feel like they've been slapped around by the insurances that doesn't matter what you want to sell something for. Here's the price you're going to get.
Doesn't matter what you bought it for, we're going to pay you this.
I mean, it's been talked about by the smart people and the right people, but it's neat that that's still around. And it's cool to know that it's valid. I mean, just the melatonin, and that's valid, you know, and along with the vitamins. And even as a pharmacist, you're not sure who to trust. But sitting here talking to you, Megan, for this time, I think I should get a bottle of it just in case I ever go on prednisone.
Seriously, I had somebody buy it last week who's not even ever taken a steroid, but she's like, I have such high stress, I think I need it just because I have high cortisol. I'm like, okay. Here you go.
How do you expand from here if you ever decide to? Would you consider being another pharmacist? Like, I thought I might be the butter pecan pharmacist. Would you ever throw in another pharmacist thing, or would you add to this line? Or how would you do that now that you're positioned as the prednisone pharmacist? Would you do something else in that line? Because you don't want to be, well, maybe you do, but you maybe it's hard though to be the prednisone pharmacist and also the, you know, inhaler pharmacist or something. How would you deal with that?
Yeah. Yeah. So
how would you deal with too much success?
How would I deal with too much success? I think the next step when I've got the physical product sales really going is going to be on the digital product sales. So I'm going to be creating a course and creating education that people pay for instead of just the free stuff that I'm currently doing. And so that's my next pivot that I'm planning to do.
For people that want to repeat what you did, or for prednisone users?
For prednisone users. So that's my next thing to do. With a physical product, you have an inventory, you have to ship it, you have all of these things, whereas a digital course, like, it's 100% profit. And I know there's a need, and I know how to speak to that need, and I want to give them the education and the basically all those tips I gave you, expanding on that. Like, those are the foundation. That's the core of my course, basically. But diving into how and why and the real steps to take to make a change in their life, to actually lose the prednisone pounds and all of those miserable things that they're suffering, giving them real tools. And so that's my first thing that I'm planning to do once I've got the physical system really going.
If you owned the whole prednisone thought process, there's probably enough to do in there until your dying days, right? I mean, there's probably enough in prednisone.
Yeah. I mean, and I'd love to do studies, you know, like prednisone was approved in 1955 by the FDA, and it's ancient. Like, it was a grandfathered in. It didn't get safety and efficacy studies. There's actually no good list of side effects. Like, whatever they have published in the package inserts is so out of proportion to what people actually suffer. Like, if, you know, when they approved Lyrica, they know 10% of people suffered this specific side effect and 3% suffered this one. Nobody has any idea what that is with prednisone. No one. And so I'd love to, like, do studies and really have clear data about what people suffer and how we can help them, because every doctor's prescribing it, like, twisting their arm doing it, you know? And if there was a better way to give them that same help, then that would be win-win for everyone.
You know how big an issue is or a problem when you have another product that says, we ain't that product, and that's with like non-steroidal anti-inflammatories? You know, it's so bad, we have to say it's not this.
Yes,
it's something
exactly.
else, right?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, in pharmacy school, we learned all about how bad ibuprofen really is, how it causes heart disease. And it's like, but it's the non-steroidal. It's not as bad as that terrible prednisone that causes not only heart attacks and strokes, but all of those other like 150 side effects.
You think ice cream can cause weight gain?
I think so.
I haven't read any good studies on it, though. All right, Megan, pleasure talking to you. We'll be following you.
Awesome.
I talked to a lot of cool people on here, but I'm actually going to use some of the stuff you taught me. I'm gonna talk to who the hell am I kidding? I'm going to forget it by tomorrow. But that's why I asked you for the link.
Nutrinase.com/wholesale.
Thanks, Megan.
Thanks, Mike.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.